identify myself.
I'm Bree. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not going to text during the meeting. I just like to watch the time on there because I could talk about myself forever. I'm Bree. I'm an alcoholic. I have 5 years sober. My sobriety date is January 3rd, 2009. I got sober at 20 years old. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. I have a home group. Those are kind of just the basics. Thank you, Wade, for asking me to speak. It was cool. I'm actually bummed I only got to make the end of it. I had no idea what was going on, but that was really awesome. It's funny. I haven't really been asked to speak for a long time, which is interesting because I haven't really been invested in Alcoholics Anonymous for about 2 years, and I'm just now getting reinvested, so it's kind of funny that I got asked to speak during... I like to be honest when I share instead of tell you how amazing everything is, because that's just bullshit. So what I mean by I haven't really been invested in Alcoholics Anonymous is I really have been struggling with the fact that I need to be, like, go to meetings and continue to work on myself and, like, do this stuff, and not because I want to drink or not because I don't know I'm an alcoholic. I have a mother that has 10 years sober, and she's never gone to a meeting other than to see me take a chip. I have a grandfather that's sober and never done Alcoholics Anonymous. I just have a lot of people in my life that didn't use this as their solution. And so I really have been struggling with if I need to continue to do this. But I did enough footwork in the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous to kind of, like, instead of make a rash decision and just stop going to meetings and stop working with a sponsor, I've been able to work through this with my sponsor. So for the last two minimums, the bare minimum is kind of the most willing I've been. So I still go, you know, was going to a meeting a week and had sponsees and was working with my sponsor and doing that. I just wasn't involved in Alcoholics Anonymous or in the center of the fellowship or doing any of that kind of stuff. I also really struggle with sober people, because it's like, it's kind of like a mirror of myself. And like, I'm really controlling and like, it's really loud in here and I'm a really intense person. And so are most of you. So it's like hard for me to like mix with everybody because I want what I want and I want to be the intense person and I can't handle other people's emotions. And, you know, in my head, I could just live this amazing life without AA and be the intense one and the crazy one. What I found is that my life started to fall apart, shockingly, like everyone says. And, you know, it wasn't stuff that had to do with drinking and it wasn't stuff that had to do with my character defects and stuff like that. I just had some medical stuff come up and some financial stuff and just some life stuff is happening right now. And the first place I went was to my sponsor and to a meeting. And, you know, like, I don't know, I feel like this, everything that's going on in my life is happening right now because I'm supposed to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't think that I would have realized that had my entire life kind of not just fallen apart. So I'm actually pretty grateful that I'm like walking through what I'm walking through, you know, cause I literally, the first thing I know how to do is call my sponsor, and that shows me that this program works and that I am supposed to be in this program. So that's where I'm at today. I guess I'll tell you a little bit, about what it was like, what happened and what it's like now. What it was like for me is I grew up in an alcoholic home. Everyone in my family is an alcoholic or a drug addict, self-proclaimed. I didn't diagnose them. They diagnosed themselves. My dad was a cocaine dealer. My mom was a cocaine addict, and I was conceived in a hotel room, and it was super romantic. My dad was in and out of prison my entire life. He's serving a life sentence now. And I grew up like doing the conjugal in California. As long as you're not a lifer, you can like stay there for the conjugal visits. It sounds dirty for me to say I did the conjugal visits with my dad because that's like, I don't know, conjugal visit. Never mind. That's really awkward. Anyway, so I grew up staying in the prisons and doing like that whole thing. And my mom decided that she was going to quit doing cocaine, and so she was just drinking. And we used to have like these crazy parties at my house, and everyone thought that it was really cute if I would like go around and be the bartender with my tip jar, and I used to make lemon shots for everybody, and then I would pour myself Sprite and make a lemon shot for myself and take shots with all the grown-ups, and it was like this really cute thing. And basically like all that didn't, none of this has to do with me being an alcoholic, but what it did do is it just always gave me the idea that I was going to drink. You know, there wasn't really anything else in life but drinking. Drinking's how you had fun. Drinking's how you coped with your problems. Drinking's just what grown-ups did. And I wanted to be a grown-up and I wanted to drink. I don't really remember a time in my life that I didn't drink. I remember by eighth grade, I was always showing up to my finals wasted because I hadn't studied, and drinking was already a solution for me. And I don't know, I had this idea that I could just be like this crazy party girl, and nothing about me wants to drink like a gentleman or a lady. Like I want to piss my pants and drool on myself and get so wasted that I don't know what's going on. Like, I do not want to be in this world. I have horrible social anxiety. Like, nothing about me wants to be in my skin. I am restless, irritable, and discontent. Like, I do not know how to be me. I am not happy with me. Like, everything in between here is just insane. So, like, nothing about me wants to have, like, a glass of wine with some spaghetti. Like, I want to be shit-faced always. And that's, and that's like what my drinking looked like from, you know, the get-go. I was like this little like 12-year-old girl, like dancing on tables, like, and you know, I just, nothing about it looked normal. I remember being 13 and my mom asked me what I did the night before and I said I didn't remember. And she like kind of tried to explain to me that like most people when they drink should remember what happened, and that I was drinking like my father if I was blacking out already. But I didn't really care. It didn't really mean anything to me. When I was 15, my dad was out on bail for a shooting thing. And then he was drinking and driving and killed two little kids and their dad. So in my head, that was like the ultimate excuse for me to do whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and for it to look as messy as it could. And that's what I did. I am also a very fond, I'm very fond of anything you can snort, which is why that alcohol thing, if it is real, is like, that's going to be a hard one for me, the powdered alcohol. My two favorite things in the world, powdered substances and alcohol. But by 15 years old, I, you know, was already snorting any and everything I can get my hands on, and blacking out regularly. I got suspended. Well, I got expelled and then they let me back. But I got suspended from school for being caught with cocaine on campus. Apparently you're not supposed to do that. And that was the first time I got arrested. And I don't know like what, for me, what happened at that time, but I asked for help in that moment because I didn't want to get in trouble. So I felt like if I just said I had a cocaine problem, that would kind of like clean stuff up. And I had already had a problem with huffing, which was like embarrassing in and of itself. But so my mom knew that I was struggling with substance stuff. So she sent me to a treatment center for 18 months. And I couldn't even stay sober in there. And then I'm trying to rush through all this stuff because it's just kind of boring. But I got 9 months sober, eventually. But I wasn't working any sort of program at all, like not working with a sponsor, not really into meetings. And what I learned from that is that if I'm not working any program, like even less of a program than I have been working right now, if I'm not working any program and I don't have a substance, like I will literally go fucking insane. And that's what happened. I ended up trying to kill myself and ended up in a psych ward for a while. And it's just like I have to have some sort of solution. Like I am not okay. You know, I am bodily and mentally different from my fellows. And like I need something to solve that problem. And if I don't have anything, I'd rather not be in this world than try and face life without the program or without alcohol or without something. And so I started to kind of work a program, but I was so young at this time. And I ended up going to college, and I stayed sober. I went to Chico State in Northern California, which is like the only reason I picked it was because it was a big party school. And I stayed sober for 2 weeks. In the time that I was at Chico, I'll just sum it up really quickly. I ended up in the hospital for severe alcohol poisoning, where they didn't think I was going to wake up 4 times. I was arrested. I decided that stripping would be a good way to pay for my hospital bills. I was kicked out of school. Like, I was just everything that can go wrong. Like, I am an alcoholic. Everything that can go wrong when you're drinking happen to me because I just don't care. Once I start drinking, I absolutely cannot stop. I will step over anyone and anything to continue to drink to just feel okay. I mean, there's for sure the nights where I like promised everyone I'd just have one beer and I was able to do that. But the big book talks about being able to control and enjoy our drinking. And I know for a fact that when I am controlling my drinking, I have like this pit in my stomach where I'm pissed at everybody. And it like literally hurts me to have to like control my drinking for the evening. And most of the time it doesn't end up even working out that way. But I for sure had those nights. But for the most part, every time I drink, I lose control of what's going to happen next or how much I'm going to drink then or what drug I'm going to do or what city I'm going to wake up in. And the scary part for me in all of that was that I started to black out for periods of days. And I remember when I had been in treatment and been to meetings before, and maybe even the third edition of the Big Book or the fourth edition has a story about somebody that got on a plane and forgot days. No, that's definitely the Big Book, fourth edition of the Big Book. And so I remember hearing that in the rooms that it was scary for me to relate to the blacking out for the days. And it was scary for me that I could wake up, you know, or come to, on a Sunday evening and have no idea who I was around or where my clothes were or where my car was or what city I was in. And so that kind of stuff started to scare me. And I decided to finally actually give AA a try. And I called my mom. And she came up to Chico to pick me up. And she told me that if I was not sober when she got there, that I would be living in LA homeless. So I made sure to get sober or to be sober when she got there. And I didn't know that I was detoxing at the time. I just thought that I was really sick. But I ended up having staph infection in my eye and thrush in my mouth and scarlet fever. So I spent my first month of sobriety pretty sick. But I was willing to do anything. Like, I was so desperate at that time, and I was so scared, and I was scared of everything. I was scared of answering the phone. I was scared of checking my mail. Like, I was scared of checking my email. Like, I had created so much wreckage in that period of time that life just terrified me. So I really was willing to do anything, and that's the first time I really gave AA a try, and I was thoroughly working the steps, and of course, a guy got involved. I, you know, have a major issue with men. So a guy got involved, and then I just didn't really need AA because I had a boy, and that boy, my higher power at the time, decided that I was psycho because that's what happens when I don't work a program. And so I decided to move out to Salt Lake City, Utah, because the Mormons would keep me sober. And I like to snowboard, so that's what I did. And I moved out here, and again, I was drunk pretty quickly. But the thing that was important for me about that relapse is nothing bad happened. I didn't get arrested once. I didn't go to the hospital. Nothing insane happened. I just didn't like who I was. So January 1st, 2009 was the last drink I took. And it wasn't any, I mean, I was really wasted, but it wasn't anything crazy. It wasn't anything to get sober over. I just absolutely hated myself. And the reason my sobriety date's January 3rd is because I like forgot I was going to be sober and smoked weed on accident, which isn't even my drug choice. But so that's why my sobriety date's January 3rd. So from there, I ended up moving back home just because I needed a little bit of extra support in getting sober. But it was like a big thing for me to have used and not have all the chaos distracting me and just realize how much I hate the person I am when I drink. You know, like I hate the way I view the world. I hate how selfish I am. Like I hate who's looking at me in the mirror. Like I hate everything about who I am and the way I act when I'm using. And so I got sober and I had, again, no idea how to act or do any of that stuff because I'd been using for, you know, since I was a little girl. So that was like the first step in my sobriety was I got this sponsor and she was really mean and I really think she disliked me for the first year she was sponsoring me. But I didn't know things like I couldn't sit on your boyfriend's lap in front of you. Like I had no idea that that wasn't okay. Or that like I needed to put clothes on to go to a meeting. Or that it was inappropriate to like let your boyfriend drive my car. Or just like all of this like basic life stuff that's like not, I mean, it was driving the women in Alcoholics Anonymous away from me. And so I like my first year was changing my behaviors and kind of changing like basic life stuff and like learning to hang my towel up and like putting my clothes away and putting clothes in a dirt, just basic life stuff so that I wasn't just like this filthy, broken little girl. And so that's what year one of my sobriety was. And I was working my steps through this. I had this resentment towards this girl, of course, over a guy. And in this resentment, I got to learn a lot about myself and how I treat people and that kind of stuff. And I would like stand outside of AA meetings and fight with this person and like throw a Red Bull can at her head. And like, it was just like insanity. So year two was kind of working on my anger because I didn't hate that person for anything they did. I hated that person because I hated myself and because I had all these resentments and I hated her for everything that had ever happened in my life. And she just happened to be the person that was standing in front of me. And now I'm truly grateful for her, to her. We don't talk to each other. But I'm grateful for her because she brought up like so much rage in me that I had bottled up that like I had no idea was in me because like I'm a pretty like, you know, like just like mellow, like low key person usually. And I went full psycho with her. So I got to work through like resentments in a four step. I really got to work on 6 and 7 because my sponsor made it very, very clear to me that I was not going to be able to make my ninth step amends until I had worked 6 and 7. Like I couldn't go back to my mom and apologize for my dishonesty if I was going to lie straight to her face in the amends. And I couldn't go back to someone and, you know, apologize for stealing from them if I was still stealing and like just all these kind of basic life things. So year two was a lot of 4 through 9 for me. And I don't know, I think that, you know, the promises, one of the big promises is that, we'll have a whole attitude and outlook upon life. Like I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I literally had no idea how to carry myself as a woman. And I fall short on a lot of stuff today. I'm like very, very, I isolate to the extreme. I'm terrified of people. You know, I still live in a lot of fear. But I have done enough work in Alcoholics Anonymous to have the promise of my whole attitude and outlook upon life has changed, has absolutely come true for me. You know, I'm dealing with this medical situation, and it could possibly, I don't know, I'll just be brutally honest. So I could possibly end up sterile, I guess is the term, or infertile from this situation. And I'm able to look at this situation and be able to say, like, I'm grateful that it's happening to me as opposed to some of my friends who truly, truly, have this desire to be parents and to give that in the world. And, like, I don't know if I'm going to make sense with this. It's, like, something that's just been floating around in my head all day. But like I have friends in my life who their biggest goal is to be a mother and to give that back to the world. That's never been me. I'm very much of a work person and that's where I get my like pleasure in life and my sense of purpose in life is work. So I've been able to see that like my higher powers put this situation in my life because like I'm probably the right person for this to happen to because other people, this would devastate them and this would ruin them. And like I can walk through this situation and be like, okay, that would be weird and uncomfortable and that's not really something I want, but I would be like, I can be okay through that. And so I'm looking at some of these kind of situations, like, and that shows me that everything about who I am has changed. Because when I was using, everything was about me, and everything in the world was happening to me, and the world was happening at me, and poor me. And, like, I had the saddest perception of my life and thought all these horrible things had happened to me. But it's like today I get to have some like gratitude for situations and maybe like pick up a fucking newspaper and realize that my life isn't that bad in comparison to what's happening in this world. You know, and I get to show up for women that are going through way crazier situations than I'm going through. And I've also learned through working the steps and having sponsorship is really like, that is the, like where I get everything from in this program. That's where I thrive in this program. That's the magic of this program for me. But I'm just going to share this one story and then I'll probably be done because I have no idea what I'm talking about. But I had a sponsee and she was 15 years old and she was just a little nutcase, just like I was when I was 15 in the program. And I had just gone to see my dad for the first time and I'm probably 21 at this time. Just gone since he had been sentenced to life to see him for the first time. And I went through the whole process of going and visiting him at this jail, and it was, you know, emotional and heart-wrenching and blah, blah, blah. But after that experience, I ended up sponsoring this girl, and she ended up having a brother that was in prison with my dad doing a life sentence, and my dad and this guy hated each other. And I, you know, I am trying to walk my sponsee through the process of going and seeing her brother at the same time, or, you know, going to visit her brother for the first time. And I'm on the phone with my dad and I'm saying, you know, I'm going to go with her to visit this guy. And in there, it's a big deal, for me to have gone and seen this guy. And my dad is not a nice person at all. He's a very angry man. And he said, you know, do whatever you need to do to help that little girl. So I got to walk this girl and her mother through going and visiting her brother for the first time. And it kind of showed me, that like the only reason I feel like I go through life experiences is so that I can walk somebody else through life experiences. And like, it's like the world's a lot bigger than me. Like, it's not about me. This didn't happen to me. It happened for me so that I can get the experience of helping somebody else, you know? And that's kind of how I try and like view life situations, and they don't have to be as big of a deal, but it's definitely like what keeps me sober and like what keeps me like trucking along in life. And this program is just like the beauty of being able to give back and walk people through life experiences. So I'm really excited that you asked me to speak. I'm excited to, you know, be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous again. I think it's exactly where I need to be. So thanks.
Thank you very much.